strange, from the significant to the trivial.
"There's one of ours,"
Winter said, touching a spot on the display. Leia read the item, an unconfirmed intelligence report from the BIVFASH system, suggesting that the Chimera and its support ships had been spotted near Anchoron. That was one of theirs, all right.
"How many heard that one?"
she asked Winter.
"Only 47,
Winter told her, already busy with Ghent's datapad.
"It was just before 3 yesterday afternoon, during the second assemblage session, and the Grand Corridor was fairly empty."
Leia nodded and turned back to the display.
By the time Winter had finished her list, she'd identified 2 more of their decoy messages. By the time Winter had finished those, she'd found another 5.
"Looks like that's it,"
she said, as Winter handed Ghent her first 3 lists and got to work on the others.
"Let's go ahead and run these through your sifter."
"Okay,"
Ghent said, throwing one last look of awe at Winter before turning back to his console. 3 days into this scheme, he still hadn't gotten over the way she could remember every single detail of 50 separate 1-minute conversations.
"Okay, let's see. Correlations. Okay, we're down to 127 possibilities. Mostly techs and admin types, looks like. Some off-world diplomats, too."
Leia shook her head.
"None of those are likely to have access to all this information,"
she said, waving at the decrypt display.
"It has to be someone considerably higher up the command structure."
"Wait a minute,"
Ghent interrupted, raising a finger.
"You want a big fish? You got one. Counselor Sean Tev of Sullust."
Leia frowned at the display.
"That's impossible. He was one of the earliest leaders in the Rebel Alliance. In fact, I think he was the one who brought Nien Nunba and his private raiding squad over to us after the Empire forced them out of Sullust system."
Ghent shrugged.
"I don't know anything about that. All I know is that he heard all 15 of those little teasers that wound up on Delta Source's transmitter."
"It can't be Counselor Tev,"
Winter spoke up absently, still working at the datapad.
"He wasn't present during any of these last 6 conversations."
"Maybe one of his aides heard it?"
Ghent offered.
"He didn't have to be there personally."
Winter shook her head.
"No. One of his aides was present, but only for one of these conversations. More importantly, Counselor Tev was present for 2 conversations the day before yesterday that Delta Source didn't transmit. 9:15 in the morning and 2:48 in the afternoon."
Ghent keyed up the relevant lists.
"You're right," he confirmed.
"Didn't think about checking things that direction.
Guess I'd better work up a better sifter program."
Behind Leia, their makeshift door swung open, and she turned to see Bell Iblis come in.
"Thought I'd find you here,"
he nodded to Leia.
"We're about ready to give the Stardust plan its first try, if you want to come and watch."
The latest scheme to locate the swarm of cloaked asteroids Thrawn had left in orbit around Coruscant.
"Yes, I do,"
Leia said.
"Winter, I'll be in the war room when you're finished here." "Yes, Your Highness."
Leia and Bell Iblis left the room and headed single file down the service corridor.
"Find anything yet?"
the general asked over his shoulder.
"Winter's still running yesterday's list,"
Leia told him.
"So far, we've got around 130 possibilities."
Bell Iblis nodded.
"Considering how many of us there are working in the palace, I'd say that qualifies as progress."
"Maybe,"
she hesitated.
"It's occurred to me that this scheme will only work if Delta Source is a single person. If it's a whole group, we may not be able to weed them out this way."
"Perhaps,"
Bell Iblis agreed.
"But I have a hard time believing we could have that many traitors here. Matter of fact, I still have trouble believing we have even one. I've always thought that Delta Source might be some kind of exotic recording system. Something security simply hasn't been able to locate yet."
"I've watched them do counterintelligence sweeps,"
Leia said.
"I can't think of how they could possibly have missed anything."
"Unfortunately, neither can I."
They arrived in the war room to find General Ryken and Admiral Drayson standing behind the main command console.
"Princess,"
Ryken greeted her gravely.
"You're just in time."
Leia looked up at the master visual. An old transport had left the group of ships standing guard in far orbit and was making its careful way down toward the planet.
How far in is it going to come?
Leia asked.
We're going to start just above the planetary shield, Counselor, Drayson told her. The post-battle analysis indicates that most of the cloaked asteroids probably wound up in low orbit.
Leia nodded. And since those would be the ones most likely to sneak through if they opened the shield, it made all the more sense to start there. Slowly, moving with the tentative awkwardness of a ship under remote control, the transport came closer in.
All right, Drayson said. Transport one control. Cut drive and prepare to dump on my command. Ready? Dump.
For a moment, nothing happened.
Then, abruptly, a cloud of brilliant dust began to billow from the aft end of the transport, swirling around lazily in the ship's wake. Keep it coming, Drayson said. Harrier, stand by negative ion beams.
All dust is clear of the transport, Admiral,
one of the officers reported.
Transport one control, pull her away, Drayson ordered.
But slowly,
Bell Iblis murmured.
We don't want to carve exhaust grooves through the dust.
Drayson threw an annoyed look back at him.
Take it nice and slow, he said grudgingly. Do we have any readings yet?
Coming in very strong, sir,
the officer at the sensor console reported.
Between 0.93 and 9.8 reflection on all bands.
Good, Drayson nodded. Keep a sharp eye on it. Harrier?
Harrier reports ready, sir,
another officer confirmed.
Fire negative ion beam, Drayson ordered. Lowest intensity. Let's see how this works.
Leia peered up at the visual. The shimmering dust particles were beginning to clump together as ions from the departing transport's drive created random electrostatic charges throughout the cloud. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the hazy line of an ion beam appear on the master tactical display and sweep across the cloud, charging all the dust particles with the same polarity so that they would repel each other. And suddenly, the coalescing dust cloud was expanding again, spreading out across the visual display like the opening of some exotic flower.
Cease fire, Drayson said. Let's see if that does it.
For a long minute, the flower continued to open, and Leia found herself staring intently at the hazy glitter. Unreasonably, of course. Given how much space there was out there, it was highly unlikely that this first dump would happen to be in the path of any of the orbiting asteroids. And even if it was, there still would be nothing for her to see on the visual. Except at the moment before its collapse, the cloaking shield seemed to twist light and sensor beams perfectly around itself, which meant there would be no dark spot cutting visibly through the dust.
Cloud's starting to break up, Admiral, the sensor officer reported. Dissipation ratio is up to 12.
Solar wind's catching it,
Riken muttered.
As expected, Drayson reminded him. Transport 2 control. Go ahead and launch.
A second transport emerged from among the orbiting ships and headed down toward the surface.
This is definitely the slow way to do this,
Bell Iblis commented quietly.
Agreed, Riken said. I wish they hadn't lost that CGT array of yours at Svivrin. They could sure have used it here.
Leia nodded. Crystal grav field traps, originally designed to zoom in on the mass of sensor-stealthed ships from thousands of kilometers away, would be ideal for this job.
I thought intelligence had a lead on another one.
They've got leads on 3, Riken said. Problem is, they're all in Imperial space. I'm still not convinced the CGT would do us all that much good here, Bell Iblis said. This close in, I suspect the Coruscant's gravity would swamp any readings we got from the asteroids.
It would be tricky, no doubt about that, Riken agreed. But I think it's our best chance.
They fell silent, as on the visual, the second transport reached its target zone and repeated the procedure of the first. Again, nothing.
That solar wind is going to be a real nuisance,
Bell Iblis commented, as the third transport headed out.
We may want to consider going with larger dust particles on the next batch. Or shifting operations to the night side, Riken suggested. That would at least cut back the effect.
Turbulence! The sensor officer barked. Vector 117, bearing 492! There was a mad scramble for the sensor console. At the very edge of the still-expanding second dust cloud, a hazy orange line had appeared, marking the turbulence created by the invisible asteroid's passage. Get a track on it, Drayson ordered. Harrier, fire at will! On the visual, red lines lanced out as the dreadnought's turbolasers began to sweep across the projected path. Leia watched the visual, hands gripping the sensor officer's chair back. And suddenly, there it was, a misshapen lump of rock, drifting slowly across the stars. Ceasefire! Drayson ordered.
Well done, gentlemen. All right, Allegiant, it's your turn. Get your tech crew out there and...
He broke off. On the visual, a mesh of thin lines had appeared crisscrossing the dark bulk of the asteroid. For a brief moment, they flared brilliantly, then faded away.
Belay that order, Allegiant, Drayson growled. Looks like the Grand Admiral doesn't want anyone else getting a look at his little toys.
At least we found one of them, Leia said. That's something.
Right, Riken said dryly. Leaves just under 300 to go. Leia nodded again and started to turn away.
This was going to take a while, and she might as well get back to Winter and Ghent.
Collision!
The sensor officer snapped. She twisted back. On the visual, the third transport was spinning wildly off course, its stern crushed and on fire, its cargo of dust spraying out in all directions.
Can you get a track?
Drayson demanded. The officer's hands were skating across his board.
Negative. Insufficient data. All I can do is a probability cone. I'll take it, Drayson said. All ships open fire. Full pattern bombardment. Target cone as indicated.
The cone had appeared on the tactical, and from the distant fleet, turbolaser fire began to appear.
Open the cone to 50% probability, Drayson ordered. Battle stations, you take that outer cone. I want that target found.
The encouragement was unnecessary. The space above Coruscant had become a firestorm, with turbolaser blasts and proton torpedoes cutting through the marked probability cone. The target zone stretched and expanded as the computers calculated the invisible asteroid's possible paths, the ships and battle stations shifting aim in response. But there was nothing there. And after a few minutes, Drayson finally conceded defeat.
All units cease fire, he said, his voice tired. There's no more point. We've lost it.
There didn't seem to be anything else to be said. In silence, they stood and watched as the crippled transport, far out of range of the fleet's tractor beams, spun slowly toward the planetary shield and its impending death. Its crushed stern skimmed the shield, and the fire of burning drive gases was joined by the sharp blue-white edge of shattered atomic bonds. A muffled flash as the stern broke away. A brighter flash as the bow hit the shield. Scatterings of dark debris against the flame as the hull began to break up. And with a final spattering of diffuse fire, it was gone. Leia watched the last flickers fade away, running through her Jedi calming exercises and forcing the anger from her mind. Allowing herself the luxury of hating Thrawn for doing this to them would only fog her own intellect. Worse, such hatred would be a perilous step toward the dark side. There was a breath of movement at her shoulder, and she turned to see Winter at her side. The other woman was gazing up at the visual, a look of ancient pain deep in her eyes. It's all right, Leia assured her. There wasn't anyone aboard.
I know,
Winter murmured.
I was thinking about another transport I saw go down like that over Zikweed. A passenger transport.
She took a deep breath, and Leia could see the conscious effort as she put her always vivid past away from her.
I'd like to speak with you, Your Highness, whenever you're finished here.
Leia reached out past Winter's carefully neutral expression and touched her sense. Whatever the news was, it wasn't good. I'll come now, she said.
They left the war room and circled back past the turbolifts to their service corridor and their secret decrypt room. And the news was indeed not good.
"This can't be,"
Leia said, shaking her head as she reread Gen's analysis.
"We know there's a leak in the palace."
"I've checked it backwards, forwards, and from the inside out,"
Gen said.
"It comes up the same every time. Feed in everyone who heard and didn't hear the stuff Delta Source sent out. Feed in everyone who heard or didn't hear the stuff Delta Source didn't send out, and you come out with the same answer every time. A straight, flat zero."
Leia keyed the datapad for a replay and watched as the list of names dwindled with each sifting until it was gone.
"Then Delta Source has to be more than one person,"
she said.
"I already ran that,"
Gent said, waving his hands helplessly.
"It doesn't work either. You wind up having to have at least 15 people. Your security here can't be that bad."
"Then he's picking and choosing what he transmits, sending some of what he hears, but not all of it."
Gent scratched at his cheek.
"I suppose that could be it,"
he said reluctantly.
"I don't know, though. You look at some of the really stupid stuff he sent. I mean, there was one in that last transmission that was nothing but a couple of Arcona talking about what one of them was going to name her hatchlings. Either this guy doesn't remember too good, or else he's got a really weird priority list."
The door opened, and Leia turned as Bell Iblis stepped in.
"I saw you leave," the general said. "Have you found something?"
Wordlessly, Leia handed him the datapad. Bell Iblis glanced over it, then read it through more carefully.
"Interesting,"
he said at last.
"Either the analysis is wrong, or Winter's memory is starting to fail her, or Delta Source is onto us."
"How do you figure that?"
Leia asked.
"Because he's clearly no longer transmitting everything he hears,"
Bell Iblis said.
"Something must have aroused his suspicions."
Leia thought back to all those staged conversations.
"No,"
she said slowly.
"I don't believe it. I never picked up even a hint of malice or suspicion."
Bell Iblis shrugged.
"The alternative is to believe we have a whole spy nest here. Wait a minute, though. This isn't quite as bad as it sounds. If we assume we didn't catch on right away, we should still be able to use the data from the first 2 days to cut the suspect list down to a manageable number."
Leia felt her stomach tighten.
"Garm, we're talking about over 100 trusted members of the New Republic here. We can't go around accusing that many people of treason. Counselor Phalia's accusations against Admiral Akbar were bad enough. This would be orders of magnitude worse."
"I know that, Leia," Bell Iblis said firmly. "But we can't let the Empire continue to listen in on our secrets. Offer me an alternative and I'll take it."
Leia bit at her lip, her mind racing.
"What about that comment you made on the way to the war room?"
she asked.
"You said you thought Delta Source might be nothing but an exotic recording system." "If it is, it's somewhere in the Grand Corridor,"
Winter said before Bell Iblis could answer.
"That's where all the conversations that were transmitted took place."
"Are you sure?"
Bell Iblis frowned.
"Absolutely,"
Winter said.
"Everyone." "That's it, then,"
Leia said, feeling the first stirrings of excitement.
"Somehow, someone's planted a recording system in the Grand Corridor."
"Don't get excited,"
Bell Iblis cautioned.
"I know it sounds good, but it's not that easy. Microphone systems have certain well-defined characteristics, all of which are quite well known and can be readily picked up by a competent counterintelligence sweep."
"Unless it goes dormant when counterintelligence comes by,"
Gent suggested.
"I've seen systems do that."
Bell Iblis shook his head.
"But then you're talking about something with at least minimal decision-making capabilities. Anything that close to droid-level intelligence would..."
"Hey!"
Gent interrupted excitedly.
"That's it! Delta Source isn't a person! It's a droid!"
Leia looked at Bell Iblis.
"Is that possible?"
"I don't know,"
the general said slowly.
"Implanting secondary espionage programming in a droid is certainly feasible. Problem is how to get that programming in past the palace's usual security procedures, and then avoiding the counterintelligence sweeps."
It would have to be a droid that has a good reason to hang around the Grand Corridor,
Leia said, trying to think it through.
But who can also leave without attracting notice whenever a sweep gets underway.
And given the sort of high-level traffic that passes through the Grand Corridor, those sweeps are pretty frequent,
Belleblis agreed.
Gint, can you get into security records and pull a list of sweep times over the past 3 or 4 days?
Sure, the kid shrugged. Probably take me a couple of hours, though. Unless you don't care if they spot me.
Belleblis looked at Leia.
What do you think?
We certainly don't want him to get caught,
Leia said.
On the other hand, we don't want to give Deltasaur's free rein of the palace any longer than we have to.
Your Highness?
Winter asked.
Pardon me, but it seems to me that if the sweeps are that frequent, all we need to do is watch the Grand Corridor until one gets underway, and then see which droids leave.
It's worth a try, Belleblis said. Gint, you get started on security. Leia, Winter, let's go.
They're coming,
Winter's voice said softly from the comlink nestled in Leia's palm.
You're sure they're palace security?
Belleblis's voice said.
Yes,
Winter said.
I've seen Colonel Bremen giving them orders, and they have droids and equipment with them.
Sounds like this is it,
Leia murmured, surreptitiously raising her hand near her mouth and hoping the three Kubas sitting across the lounge-slash-conversation ring from her wouldn't notice the odd behavior.
Watch carefully.
There were acknowledging murmurs from both of them. Lowering her hand back to her lap, Leia looked around. This was it, all right. Possibly the clearest shot at Delta Source they were likely to get. With an assemblage meeting just letting out and a council meeting about to start, the Grand Corridor was crowded with high-ranking officials. With officials, their aides and assistants, and their droids. On one level, Leia had always known how common droids were in the Imperial Palace. On another level, as she was rapidly coming to realize, she had no idea how many of them there actually were. There were quite a few 3PO protocol droids visible from where she sat, most of them accompanying groups of off-world diplomats, but some also in the entourages of various palace officials. Hovering over the crowd on repulsor lifts, a set of insectoid SPD maintenance droids were systematically cleaning the carvings and cut-glass windows that alternated along the walls. A line of MSE droids scuttled past along the far wall, delivering messages too complex for comm transmissions or too sensitive for direct data transfer, and trying hard not to get stepped on. At the next of the greenish-purple chala trees down the line, occasionally visible through the crowd, an MN2E maintenance droid was carefully pruning away dead leaves. Which one of them, she wondered, had the Empire turned into a spy?
They're starting,
Winter reported quietly.
Lining up across the corridor.
There was a sudden rustle of sound from the comlink, as if Winter had put her hand across the microphone. Another series of muffled sounds, and Leia was wondering if she could go and investigate when a man's voice came on.
Counselor Organa Solo.
Yes, she said cautiously. Who is this?
Lieutenant Machel Kendi, Counselor. Palace Security. Are you aware that a third person is tapping into your comlink signal?
It's not a tap, Lieutenant, Leia assured him. We were holding a three-way discussion with General Belleblis.
I see,
Kendi said, sounding a little disappointed. Probably thought he'd stumbled onto Delta Source.
I'll have to ask you to suspend your conversation for a few minutes, Counselor. We're about to do a sweep of the Grand Corridor, and we can't have any stray comlink transmissions in the area.
I understand, Leia said. We'll wait until you're finished.
She shut off the comlink and replaced it in her belt, her heart beginning to thud in her ears. Twisting casually around in her seat, she made sure she could see the entire end of the Grand Corridor. If there was an espionage droid present, he'd be shuffling this direction as soon as he noticed the sweep team coming from the other end. Overhead, the hovering cleaning droids had been joined by a new set of SPDs, moving down the corridor as they methodically checked the upper walls and convoluted contours of the vaulted ceiling for any microphones or recording systems that might have somehow been planted there since the last sweep. Directly beneath them,
Leia could see Lieutenant Kendi and his squad walking through the milling diplomats in a military straight line stretched across the corridor and watching the displays of their shoulder-slung detectors. The line reached her lounge area, passed it, and continued without incident to the end of the corridor. There the squad waited, letting the SPD droids and a group of wall-hugging MSEs finish their part of the sweep and catch up. Reformed again, the entire group disappeared down the hallway toward the inner council offices. And that was that. The entire grand corridor had been swept, and had obviously come up negative. And not a single droid had scurried out ahead of the sweep. Something off to the side caught her eye, but it was just the MN2E maintenance droid she'd noticed earlier, rolling up to the challah tree that sprouted out of the floor beside her conversation ring. Clucking softly to itself, the droid began poking delicate feelers through the branches, hunting for dead or dying leaves. Dead or dying. Rather like their theory. With a sigh, she pulled out her comlink. Winter, Garm.
Here, Your Highness.
Winter's voice came promptly.
So am I,
Beliblis added.
What happened?
Leia shook her head.
Absolutely nothing, she told them. As far as I could tell, none of the droids even twitched.
There was a short pause.
I see,
Beliblis said at last.
Well, it may just be that our droid doesn't happen to be here today. What we need to do is send Winter back to Ghent and have her add droids into the list.
What do you think, Winter?
Leia asked.
I can try. The problem would be identifying specific droids. Externally, one 3PO protocol droid looks basically like any other.
We'll take whatever you can get,
Beliblis said.
It's here, though. Somewhere close by. I can feel it.
Leia held her breath, stretching out with her Jedi senses. She didn't have Beliblis's fine-honed warrior's intuition, nor did she have Luke's far deeper Jedi skill. But she could sense it, too. Something about the Grand Corridor.
I think you're right,
she told Beliblis.
Winter, you'd better head down and get busy on this.
Certainly, Your Highness.
I'll come with you, Winter,
Beliblis volunteered.
I want to see what's happening with the Stardust plan.
Leia shut off the comlink and leaned back in her seat, fatigue and discouragement seeping into her mind despite her best efforts to hold it back.
It had seemed like such a good idea, using Ghent's decrypt to try to identify Delta Source. But so far, every lead had simply melted away from in front of them. And time was running out. Even if they were able to keep Ghent's work a secret, which was by no means certain, each of these failed gambits simply brought them closer to the inevitable day when Delta Source would finally notice all the activity and shut down. And when that happened, their last chance to identify the Imperial spy in their midst would be gone. And that would be a disaster.
Not because of the leak itself. Imperial intelligence had been stealing information since the Rebel Alliance was first formed, and they'd managed to live through it. What was infinitely more dangerous to the New Republic was the deepening aura of suspicion and distrust that Delta Source's mere existence had already spread through the palace. Counselor Phalia's discredited accusations against Admiral Ackbar had already shown what such distrust could do to the delicate multi-species coalition that made up the New Republic. If that leadership was found to contain a genuine Imperial agent... Across the conversation ring, the three Kubas got to their feet and headed away, circling around behind the challah tree and the MN2E droid working alongside it and disappearing into the traffic flow down the corridor. Leia found herself staring at the droid, watching as it eased a manipulator arm carefully through the branches toward a small cluster of dead leaves, clucking softly to itself all the while. She had a brief run-in with an Imperial espionage droid on the Nogri home planet of Honegger, a run-in which could have spelled disaster for her and genocide for the remnants of the Nogri race. If Beliblis was right, if Delta Source was, in fact, merely a droid and not a traitor... But it didn't really help. The Empire simply could not have infiltrated an espionage droid into the palace without the collaboration of one or more of the beings here.
Security invariably did a complete screening of every droid that came into the palace, whether on a permanent or temporary basis, and they knew exactly what to look for. Hidden secondary espionage programming would show up like a burst of pale red against the subtle background pattern of that Chala tree. Leia frowned, staring at the tree as her chain of thought jolted to a halt. Another small burst of red appeared on the slender trunk as she watched, sending a pale red ring rippling outward and around the trunk until it faded into the quiet purple background turmoil. Another flicker followed, and another, chasing each other around the trunk like ripples from a dripping waterline. All of them more or less the same size, all of them originating from the same place on the trunk. And each of them exactly in time with one of the clucking noises from the MN2E droid. And suddenly then, it hit her, like a violent wave of icy water. Fumbling at her belt with suddenly trembling fingers, she keered for the central operator.
"This is Counselor Organa Solo," she identified herself. "Get me Colonel Bremen in security. Tell him I've found Delta Source."
They had to dig nearly 8 meters down before they found it. A long, fat, age-tarnished tube, half buried in the side of the Chala tree's taproot, with 1,000 slender sampling leads feeding into one end and a direct transmission fiber snaking out the other. Even then, it took another hour and the preliminary report before Bremen himself was finally convinced.
"The techs say it's like nothing they've ever seen before,"
the security chief told Leia, Bail Iblis and Mon Mothma, as they stood on the scattered dirt around the uprooted Chala tree.
"But apparently it's reasonably straightforward. Any pressure on the Chala tree's trunk, including the pressure created by sound waves, sets off small chemical changes in the inner layers of bark."
"Which is what creates the shifting colors and patterns?"
Mon Mothma asked.
"Right."
Bremen nodded, wincing slightly.
"Obvious in hindsight, really. The pattern changes are far too fast to be anything but biochemical in origin. Anyway, those implanted tubes running up into the trunk continuously sample the chemicals and shunt the information back down to the module on the taproot. The module takes the chemical data, turns it back into pressure data, and from there back into speech. Some other module, maybe farther down the taproot, sorts out the conversations and gets the whole thing ready for encrypting and transmission. That's all there is to it.
An organic microphone."
Bail Iblis nodded.
"With no electronics anywhere in sight for a counterintelligence sweep to pick up."
"A whole series of organic microphones,"
Bremen corrected, glancing significantly at the twin rows of trees lining the grand corridor.
"We'll get rid of them right away."
"Such a brilliant plan,"
Mon Mothma mused.
"And so very like the Emperor. I'd always wondered how he obtained some of the information he used against us in the Senate."
She shook her head.
"Even after his death, it seems, his hand can move against us."
"Well, this part's about to be stilled anyway,"
Bail Iblis said.
"Let's get a team up here, Colonel, and dig up some trees."
Chapter 18.
In the distance, far across the scarred plain, there was a glimmer of reflected light.
"Mazik's coming,"
Card commented. Gillespie turned his attention from the refreshments table and squinted out past the crumbling fortress wall.
"Someone's coming anyway,"
he agreed, putting down his cup and the cold brewalki he'd been munching on and wiping his hands on his tunic. Pulling out his macro binoculars, he peered through them.
"Yeah, it's him," he confirmed. "Funny. He's got two other ships with him."
Card frowned at the approaching spot.
"Two other ships?"
"Take a look,"
Gillespie said, handing over the macro binoculars. Card held them up to his eyes. There were three incoming, all right. A sleek space yacht, and two slender, highly vicious-looking ships of an unfamiliar design.
You suppose he's brought some guests?
Gillespie asked.
He didn't say anything about guests when he checked in with Aves a few minutes ago,
Card said. Even as he watched, the two flanking ships left the formation, dropping to the plain below and vanishing into one of the deep ravines crisscrossing it.
Maybe you'd better check.
Maybe I'd better,
Card agreed, handing back the macro binoculars and pulling out his comlink.
Aves, you have some ID on our incoming?
Sure do,
Aves' voice came back.
Gimmicked IDs, all of them. But we read them as the Distant Rainbow, the Skyclaw, and the Raptor.
Card grimaced. The designs might not be familiar, but the names certainly were. Mazik's personal transport and two of his favorite customized fighters.
Thank you,
he said, and shut down the comlink.
Well?
Gillespie asked. Card returned the comlink to his belt.
It's just Mazik, he said.
What's that about Mazik?
Niles Ferrier's voice put in. Card turned. The ship thief was standing behind them at the refreshments table, a generous helping of charred perky nuts cupped in one hand.
I said Mazik was coming,
he repeated.
Good,
Ferrier nodded, popping one of the nuts into his mouth and cracking it loudly between his teeth.
About time. Finally get this meeting going.
He sauntered off, crunching as he went, nodding at Dravis and Klingon as he passed.
I thought you didn't want him here,
Gillespie muttered. Card shook his head.
I didn't. Apparently the feeling wasn't universal.
Gillespie frowned.
You mean someone else invited him? Who?
I don't know,
Card admitted, watching as Ferrier wandered over to the corner where Elor and his group had gathered.
I haven't found a way to ask around without looking either petty, suspicious, or overbearing. Anyway, it's probably quite innocent. Someone assuming that all those at the original Trogan meeting should continue to be involved.
The lack of an invitation notwithstanding?
Card shrugged.
Perhaps that was assumed to be an oversight. At any rate, calling attention to it at this point would only create friction. Some of the others already seem resentful that I've apparently taken over management of the operation.
Gillespie tossed that last bit of Brualki into his mouth.
Yeah, maybe it's innocent,
he said darkly.
But maybe it's not.
We're keeping a good watch on the likely approaches,
Card reminded him.
If Ferrier's made a deal with the Empire, we'll see them coming in plenty of time.
I hope so,
Gillespie grunted, surveying the refreshments table for his next target.
I hate running on a full stomach.
Card smiled, and he was starting to turn away when his comlink beeped. He pulled it out and flicked it on, eyes automatically turning to the sky.
Card,
he said into it.
This is Torv,
the other identified himself. And from the tone, Card knew something was wrong.
Could you step downstairs a minute?
Certainly,
Card said, his other hand dropping to his side and the blaster holstered there.
Should I bring anyone?
No need. We're not having a party or anything here.
Translation: reinforcements were already on their way.
Understood, Card said. I'll be right there.
He shut off the comlink and returned it to his belt.
Trouble?
Gillespie asked, eyeing Card over his glass.
We've got an intruder,
Card said, glancing around the courtyard. None of the other smugglers or their entourages seemed to be looking his direction.
Do me a favor and keep an eye on things here.
Sure. Anyone in particular I should watch?
Card looked at Ferrier, who had now left Elor and was heading toward Partah and her fellow Hodin.
Make sure Ferrier doesn't leave.
The main part of the base had been set up 3 levels below the top remaining floors of the ruined fortress, in what had probably been the kitchens and ancillary prep areas for a huge high-ceilinged room that had probably been a banquet area. The wild card was berthed in the banquet chamber itself, moderately tight-fit for a ship its size,
but offering the twin advantages of reasonable concealment plus the possibility for a quick exit should that become necessary. Card arrived at the high double doors to find Finn Torv and five of the crewers from the Starry Ice waiting with drawn blasters.
"Report," he said.
"We think someone's in there,"
Torv told him grimly.
"Chin was taking the Vornskers for a walk around the ship and saw something moving in the shadows along the south wall."
The wall closest to the wild card's lowered entrance ramp.
"Anyone currently aboard the ship?"
"Lacton was working on the secondary command console,"
Torv said.
"Aves told him to sit tight on the bridge with his blaster pointed at the door until we got someone else there. Chin grabbed some of the Etherway people who were hanging around and started searching through the south end rooms. Denken is doing the same with the north end ones."
Card nodded.
"That leaves the ship for us, then. Juju,"
he pointed to two of the Starry Ice crewers,
"will stay here and guard the doors. Nice and easy. Let's go."
They pulled open one of the double doors and slipped inside. Directly ahead, the wild card's stern rose up darkly in front of them. 150 meters beyond it, glimpses of the blue Herjana sky could be seen through the broken fortress wall.
"I wish we had better lighting in here,"
Torv muttered as he looked around.
"It looks easier to hide in than it really is,"
Card assured him, pulling out his comlink.
"Denken, Chin, this is Card. Report."
"Nothing so far in the north end rooms,"
Denken's voice came promptly.
"I sent Corvus for some portable sensor equipment, but he's not back yet."
"Nothing here either, Captain."
"All right," Card said. "We're coming in around the starboard side of the ship and heading for the entryway. Be ready to give us cover fire if we need it."
"We're ready, Captain."
Card slid the comlink back in his belt.
Taking a deep breath, he headed out.
They searched the ship, the banquet chamber, and all the offices and storerooms on the periphery. And in the end, they found no one.
"I must have imagined it,"
Chin said morosely, as the searchers gathered together at the foot of the wild card's entrance ramp.
"Sorry, Captain. Truly sorry."
"Don't worry about it,"
Card said, looking around the banquet chamber. Cleared or not, there was still an uneasy feeling tugging at him. Like someone was watching and laughing.
"We all misread things sometimes, if this was in fact a misreading. Torv, you're certain you and Lacton cover the entire ship?"
"Every cubic meter of it,"
Torv said firmly.
"If anyone sneaked into the wild card, he was out long before we got here."
"What about those Vornska pets of yours, sir?"
one of the Starry Ice crewers asked.
"Are they any good at tracking?"
"Only if you're hunting Islamari or Jedi,"
Card told him.
"Well, whoever was here seems to be gone now. Still, we may have driven him off before he finished whatever it was he came to do. Torv, I want you to set up a guard detail for the area. Have Aves alert the duty personnel aboard the Starry Ice and Etherway as well."
"Right,"
Torv said, pulling out his comlink.
"What about our guests upstairs? Should we warn them too?"
"What are we, their mothers?"
one of the other crewers snorted.
"They're big boys. They can look out for themselves."
"I'm sure they can,"
Card reproved him mildly.
"But they're here at my invitation. As long as they're under our roof, they're under our protection."
"Does that include whoever sent the intruder Chin spotted?"
Lacton asked. Card looked up at his ship.
"That will depend on what the intruder was sent to do," he said.
And speaking of his guests, it was time he got back to them. Mazik would have joined them by now, and Ferrier wasn't the only one impatient for the meeting to begin.
"Lacton, as soon as Corvus gets here with those scanners, I want the two of you to run a complete check of the ship, starting with the exterior hull. Our visitor may have left us a gift, and I don't want to fly out of here with a homing beacon or timed concussion bomb aboard somewhere. I'll be up in the conference area if you need me."
He left them to their work, feeling once again Mara Jade's absence from the group.
One of these days, he was going to have to make the time to go back to Coruscant and get her and Ghent back. Assuming he was allowed to do so, his information sources had picked up a vague and disturbing rumor that an unnamed woman had been caught giving assistance to an Imperial commando force on Coruscant. Given Mara's obvious disdain for Grand Admiral Thrawn, it was unlikely she would actually give his empire any help. But on the other hand, there were many in the New Republic starting to edge toward a kind of war hysteria. And given her shadowy history, Mara was an obvious candidate for that kind of accusation. All the more reason for him to get her off Coruscant. He reached the upper courtyard to find that Mazik had indeed arrived. He was standing with the Hodin group, talking earnestly with Parta, with a deceptively decorative female bodyguard he'd had at Trogan, an aloof half-step back from the conversation, trying to look inconspicuous. As were the pair of men just behind her, and the four standing around them a few meters away, and the six scattered elsewhere around the edges of the courtyard. Card paused in the arched entrance, a quiet warning alarm going off in the back of his head. For Mazik to bring a pair of fighting ships to protect him en route was one thing. To bring a full squad of enforcers into a friendly meeting was something else entirely. Either the Imperial attack on Trogan had made him uncharacteristically nervous, or else he wasn't planning for the meeting to remain quite so friendly.
"Hey, Card,"
Ferrier called, beckoning him over.
"Come on, let's get this meeting out of the bay."
"Certainly," Card said, putting on his best host smile as he walked into the room. Too late now to bring some of his own people up here for balance. He would just have to hope that Mazik was merely being cautious.
"Good afternoon, Mazik. Thank you for coming."
"No problem,"
Mazik said, his eyes cool. He didn't smile back.
"We have more comfortable seats prepared in a room back this way,"
Card said, gesturing to his left.
"If you'd all care to follow me..."
"I have a better idea,"
Mazik interrupted.
"What do you say we hold this meeting inside the wild card?"
Card looked at him. Mazik returned the gaze evenly, his face not giving anything away. Apparently he was not merely being cautious.
"May I ask why?"
Card asked.
"Are you suggesting you have something to hide?"
Mazik countered. Card allowed himself a cool smile.
"Of course I have things to hide," he said. "So does Parta, so does Elor, so do you. We're business competitors, after all."
"So you won't allow us aboard the wild card?"
Card looked at each of the smuggler chiefs in turn. Gillespie, Dravis, and Klingon were frowning, clearly with no idea at all as to what this was all about. Parta's Hodin face was difficult to read, but there was something about her stance that seemed oddly troubled. Elor was avoiding his eyes entirely. And Ferrier? Ferrier was smirking. Not obviously, almost invisibly, in fact, behind that beard of his. But enough. More than enough. And now, far too late, he finally understood. What Chin had seen, and what all of them had subsequently failed to catch, had been Ferrier's shadowy defil. Mazik's men were here. Cards were three levels down, guarding his ship and base against a danger that was long gone. And all his guests were waiting for his answer.
"The wild card is berthed down below," he told them. "If you'd care to follow me..."
Denkin and Torv were conversing together at the foot of the wild card's entrance ramp as the group arrived.
"Hello, Captain,"
Denkin said, looking surprised.
"Can we help you?"
"No help needed," Card said. "We've decided to hold the meeting aboard ship, that's all."
"Aboard ship?"
Denkin echoed, his eyes flicking over the group and obviously not liking what he saw. Small wonder. Among the smuggler chief's aides and bodyguards, Mazik's enforcers stood out like a landing beacon cluster.
"I'm sorry, I wasn't informed," he added,
hooking the thumb of his right hand casually into the top of his gun belt.
"It was a rather spur-of-the-moment decision," Card told him.
Out of the corner of his eye, he could see the rest of his people in the banquet chamber beginning to drift from their assigned tasks as they spotted Dankin's hand signal, drifting into encirclement positions.
"Oh, sure," Dankin said, starting to look a little embarrassed. "Though, the place really isn't set up for anything this fancy. I mean, you know what the wardroom looks like."
"We're not interested in the decor," Mazik interrupted. "Please, step aside. We have business to attend to."
"Right, I understand that," Dankin said, looking even more embarrassed but holding his ground. "Problem is, we got a scanning crew aboard right now. It'll foul up the readings if we get more people coming and going."
"So foul them up," Ferrier put in. "Who do you think you are, anyway?"
Dankin didn't get a chance to come up with an answer to that one. A whiff of perfume-scented air brushed across the side of Card's face, and the hard knob of a blaster muzzle dug gently into his side.
"Nice try, Card," Mazik said, "but it won't work. Call them off. Now."
Carefully, Card looked over his shoulder. Mazik's decorative bodyguard looked back, her eyes cool and very professional.
"If I don't, then we have a firefight," Mazik said bluntly. "Right here."
There was a quiet ripple of movement through the group.
"Would someone like to tell me what's going on here?" Gillespie murmured uncertainly.
"I'll tell you inside the ship," Mazik said, his eyes steady on Card. "Assuming we all live to get in there. That part's up to our host."
"I won't surrender my people to you," Card said quietly. "Not without a fight."
"I have no interest in your people," Mazik told him. "Or your ship, or your organization. This is a personal matter between you and me, and our fellow smugglers."
"Then let's have it out," Dankin suggested. "We'll clear a space, you can choose weapons."
"I'm not talking about some stupid private feud," Mazik cut him off. "This is about treachery."
"About what?" Gillespie asked.
"Mazik." "Shut up, Gillespie,"
Mazik said, throwing a quick glare at him.
"Well, Card?"
Slowly, Card looked around the group. There were no allies here. No friends who would stand firmly by him against whatever these phantom charges were that Mazik and Ferrier had concocted. Whatever respect any of them might have for him, whatever favors they might owe him, all of that was already forgotten. They would watch while his enemies took him down. And then they would each take a piece of the organization he'd worked so hard to build. But until that happened, the men and the other beings here were still his associates, and still his responsibility.
"There's not enough room in the wardroom for anyone but the eight of us," he told Mazik quietly. "All aides, bodyguards, and your enforcers will have to stay out here. Will you order them to leave my people alone?"
For a long minute, Mazik studied his face. Then he nodded, a single curt jerk of his head.
"As long as they're not provoked, they won't bother anyone. Shada, get his blaster. Card, after you."
Card looked at Dankin and Torv and nodded. Reluctantly, they moved away from the ramp, and he started up, followed closely by the people he'd once hoped to make into a unified front against the Empire.
"He should have known better."
They settled into the wardroom, Mazik nudging Card into a chair in one corner as the others found places around the table facing him.
"All right," Card said. "We're here. Now what?"
"I want your data cards," Mazik said. "All of them. We'll start with the ones in your office."
Card nodded over his shoulder.
"Through the door and down the corridor to the right."
"Access codes?"
"None. I trust my people."
Mazik's lip twisted slightly.
"Elor, go get them. And bring a couple of data pads back with you."
Wordlessly, the Duro stood up and left.
"While we're waiting," Card said into the awkward silence, "perhaps I could present the proposal I invited you to Hijarna to hear."
Mazik snorted.
"You've got guts, Card," I'll give you that. Guts and style. Let's just sit quiet for now, okay?
Card looked at the blaster pointed at him.
Whatever you wish.
Elor returned a minute later, carrying a tray full of data cards with two data pads balanced on top.
Okay,
Mazik said, as the Duro sat down beside him.
Give one of the data pads to Pata and start going through them. You both know what to look for.
I must acknowledge at the beginning,
Elor said,
that I do not like this.
I agree,
Parta said, her head appendages writhing like disturbed snakes.
To fight openly against a competitor is part of business, but this is different.
This isn't about business, Mazik said.
Of course not, Card agreed. He's already said he has no interest in my organization, remember?
Don't try playing on my words, Card, Mazik warned. I hate that as much as I hate being led around by the nose.
I'm not leading anyone by the nose, Mazik,
Card said quietly.
I've dealt squarely with all of you since this whole thing began.
Maybe. That's what we're here to find out.
Card looked around the table, remembering back to the chaos that had flooded through the twilight world of smuggling after the collapse of Jabba the Hutt's organization. Every group in the galaxy had scrambled madly to pick up the pieces, snatching ships and people and contracts for themselves, sometimes fighting viciously for them. The larger organizations particularly had profited quite handsomely from the Hutt's demise. He wondered if Aves would be able to beat them off. Aves and Mara.
Anything yet? Mazik asked.
We will tell you if there is,
Parta said, her off-pitch tone betraying her displeasure with the whole situation. Card looked at Mazik.
Would you mind at least telling me what it is I've allegedly done?
Yeah, I want to hear it too, Gillespie seconded.
Mazik leaned back in his seat, resting his gun hand on his thigh.
It's very simple, he said. That attack on Trogon, the one where my friend Lishma was killed, appears to have been staged.
What do you mean, staged?
Dravis asked.
Just what I said. Someone hired an Imperial lieutenant and his squad to attack us.
Klingon rumbled deep in his throat.
Imperial troops do not work for hire, he growled.
This group did, Mazik told him.
Who said so?
Gillespie demanded. Mazik smiled tightly.
The most knowledgeable source there is. Grand Admiral Thrawn.
There was a moment of stunned silence. Dravis found his voice first.
No kidding, he said. And he just happened to mention this to you?
They picked me up poking around Joyal system and took me to the Chimera, Mazik said, ignoring the sarcasm. After the incident at the Bilbringi shipyards, I thought I was in for a rough time. But Thrawn told me he just pulled me in to clear the air, that no one in the Empire had ordered the Trogon attack, and that I shouldn't hold them responsible for it. And then he let me go.
Having conveniently implied that I was the one you should hold responsible, Card suggested.
He didn't finger you specifically, Mazik said. But who else had anything to gain by getting us mad at the Empire?
We're talking a Grand Admiral here, Mazik, Card reminded him. A Grand Admiral who delights in leisurely and convoluted strategies, and who has a personal interest in destroying me.
Mazik smiled tightly.
I'm not just taking Thrawn's word for this, Card. I had a friend do a little digging through Imperial military records before I came here. He got me the complete details of the Trogon arrangement.
Imperial records can be altered, Card pointed out.
Like I said, I'm not taking their word for it,
Mazik retorted.
But if we find the other end of the deal here,
he lifted his blaster slightly.
I'd say that would be hard evidence.
I see,
Card murmured, looking at Ferrier. So that was what his defil had been doing down here, planting Mazik's hard evidence.
I suppose it's too late to mention that we had an intruder down here a few minutes before you arrived.
Ferrier snorted.
All right. Nice try, Card, but a little late.
A little late for what?
Drabus asked, frowning.
He's trying to throw suspicion on someone else, that's all.
Ferrier said contemptuously.
Trying to make you think one of us planted that data card.